First communicator, Leslie Flint's guide, Mickey. Second communicator, Stephen Ward.
The sound was recorded on the 17th of September, 1964, with the
emergency. I always turn up.
Yes.
I may not always be able to speak, but I always turn up.
You have a jolly good.
I'm your most regular visitor.
You are?
Yes, on the dot.
Right.
See what the gremlins have got.
See what the
gremlins?
The gremlins have got.
Oh, who are the gremlins?
That's only my joke.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Hello, Rose.
Hello.
I say, Mickey does come out with some remarkable statements.
Yes.
What have the gremlins got?
Not one gremlin has arrived.
I don't quite know how to take that.
I must take it in a nice way.
I don't think gremlins are necessarily bad people.
Of course not.
They're rather in the same sort of street as pixies and fairies.
That's right, and they're very helpful
with people. Hobgoblins and dwarfs and all those sort of things.
I've always longed to see these creatures, and I've never been able to.
Oh, well, I don't know how to help you on that score. I suppose there are such things as fairies and hobgoblins and all the rest of it.
Oh, yes.
Most of these things which one accepts as mythological and all the rest of it, I think there's a basis of truth somewhere if you can get back to it.
Oh yes, of course.
I mean, all these things that are these legends and things that have been going on for centuries upon centuries, I think obviously way back in the dim past there's definite basis of fact. But of course things get added to and things become altered and eventually
yes.
You can hardly recognize the reality.
That's it.
So same with so many other things, of course. Time and one thing or the other change
yes.
One's ideas and outlook and opinions. People are always quoting what somebody said on such and such an occasion. I mean, you take a biography, I mean, people say so and so said so and so, or such and such a thing happened on such and such a time, you know. I mean, some of it is no doubt factual, but quite a lot of it is sort of hearsay, and it's been added to, and in fact by the time you've read it, probably it has no similarity to the original.
None at all.
I mean, Elfluzendal, when you consider that a biography written about someone who's only been dead perhaps a few years, I mean, even that can be erroneous and contain a lot of faults and mistakes. Goodness knows what must go wrong over the centuries.
Bible, for instance.
Oh, don't let's take that. I mean, we should. There's so much in the Bible which basically is true, and certain things which obviously are true, but my goodness me, there's so much that's been added and so
yes.
much been changed and altered over the centuries that it's difficult to know what is and what isn't. I think the basis of much of it is true, but I think that a lot of it is obviously mythological, and a lot of it is obviously things that have been written by people who wanted people to believe that particular theory or idea or accept that particular thing which they put down. Personally, I'm much more interested in digging down deep and finding out the real rock bottom truth. I'm not concerned with a lot of things that somebody may have said or not said. I want to find out for myself.
Yes, you're in a very lucky position now.
Yes, I know. In other words, keep on digging it.
No, I think you are, really.
Yes, I know.
Because I like to get to the bottom of things, but you never can, you know, while you're on the earth.
Well, of course, it's a matter of sifting all the time, you see, the wheat from the chaff, you know, or the chaff from the wheat, and finding out what it really is and discarding the rest.
Yes, but it's very difficult, really, to find out the truth of everything.
Well, one thing I will say, being over here, I'm learning now to be able to discern truth. In other words, one of the things that I've already discovered and learned is that it doesn't take very long to know reality and truth. In other words, no longer, for instance, can a person say something and you accept them on face value, because here, as I think I've told you and others must have told you, it's not possible to get away with it here. Of course, there are people who try it on. I mean, it's only human and natural, I suppose, when people first come, they're still in the habit of being, well, as they are, in other words, yes, saying things or implying things which on the surface sound all right, but which underneath are just the opposite of what they really feel. That's something which you can't do here. And really, therefore, if someone tells you something here, you can soon discern the truth of it. In other words, there's no guile, there's no sort of false front and artificial sort of something which deceives. I'm beginning to realize now that it's easier here to discover truth, because you've just got to be truthful, you've got to be real, in as much that you can't hide the reality of self. In other words, one has every opportunity to discover truth.
Mm. What have you been discovering since you came to speak last?
Oh, I've been discovering so much this last few months that if I were to try and string it all together and put it down, or rather transmit it to you, you'd need dozens and dozens and dozens of sittings, and you'd need dozens of tapes to record it, and you'd need dozens of stenographers to take it down, and dozens of publishers to publish the books. Goodness me, I've learned so much. I'm trying desperately to sort of get it over to you bit by bit, but it's even that, strangely enough, is complex and difficult. I mean, I think I'm becoming a reasonably good communicator, but when it comes to pushing it over to you, in other words, getting it over in such a way that it makes sense or is understandable or logical, because so much here is so utterly different in so many different senses or ways. I mean, there are so many different aspects of life here which are so changed from the old ordinary life of Earth, you know, the old routine of life on Earth, that it's a problem that I should do it.
Well, I'm sure you would. I know about it. The way you said it just now, about the tone of your voice, I should do it. Well done. Oh, dear. I wish...
What do you wish? Tell me, right? Come along, tell me what you wish. If you have any real wishes, what are they?
Well, so wishing to know as much as possible.
Well, I'm doing my best, and I'm not the only one. Others have done their best and are doing their best.
Yes. Well, I think I'm very lucky to have so many people trying to help me to understand. It's a very, very difficult thing. I was thinking, have you lost contact?
What I'm finding so intriguing, of course, is, and at the same time, let's face it, very puzzling, is the fact and the reality of this life from the point of view that everything that one is discovering or is on the verge of discovering is already there. Now, I don't know if you can quite follow what I'm conveying in this.
I do, but that's
now,
right.
You see, now, I look at it this way. Take it in the sense from the material, not so much what one terms the spiritual anyway, but take it from the material level in your world. Everything that is yet to be discovered is obviously already there, otherwise it couldn't be discovered.
Yes, of course.
You understand what I mean?
Of course.
In other words, it's all unspoken, it's all unaware, if you like, or unconscious thought that's already there in the atmosphere, ready to be tapped. In other words, it's a source of supply, it's a source of knowledge, it's a source of consciousness, put it like that then if you like, a source of consciousness that's still waiting to be tapped. But it's all there waiting to be discovered. Well, the same obviously applies in every strata of existence. For instance, on my own sphere, I have a consciousness on a certain level, and everything on that level is a reality to me, and it is a form of life, or it is my existence, it is my everything. Everything that I am is in harmony with that particular strata or sphere in which I find myself. But I'm very much aware, very much conscious of the reality of further knowledge and further experience and a further higher form of evolution or being that is already there, but just that bit further away from my present state of consciousness. I know it's there. It's like in your world, scientists, for instance, they know that in the atmosphere there are all manner of things waiting to be discovered, all manner of things waiting to be tapped and brought into sort of visible and active being. Nothing is suddenly discovered, in a sense, because although it may become apparent, or one may become aware of it, or the possibility of it, and it still, and obviously must be there, and has been there from the beginning of time, the sudden awareness, or what it seems a sudden awareness, is something which has been in the process of discovery, maybe for centuries. Everything is, in a sense, a matter of consciousness, of gradual awareness, a gradual discovery of something. It is like as life is, and I think that's how one should see life, individually and collectively, that all life is a voyage of discovery. One never knows what one is going to find the next day, or the day after that, or the next month or year. One never sees, one cannot necessarily foretell the changes that must be and must come. And yet all those differences and changes and individual approach to various subjects, all the various things that happen to humanity on any form of existence or in any form of life, are already in the process of change. In other words, as the thing is being born, so it is in the process of decay. And in life, even though it seems perhaps a lifetime, a long time, in time itself it's insignificant. And if one can take that long view of it, that all the humanity is reaching out, it is striving, it is searching, and it is gradually evolving so slowly that it seems almost that you're not making any progress, and yet it is a subtle progress. Same applies to me here, same applies to us all. On whatever strata of being we may be, we are all in the process of change. As we are being reborn, or as it were, being reborn to new experience, new knowledge and new understanding, so we are in the process of leaving behind old thoughts, old ideas, old planes of existence. It's as if all the time everything is here waiting to be found, discovered and understood and accepted, and it is that which makes, to me anyway, the reality of life a great possibility, a great reality. It makes eternity sensible. I mean, if one were to stop and think of the idea of eternity, it seems so tremendous you can't grasp it. But if you can see it all as a process of subtle change and new knowledge, new experience, from phase to phase, from existence to existence, and all the time you're evolving in such a way that you are becoming more and more part of new life, new experience, always exciting, always fresh, and always ideal, in every sense. I mean, it's so complex in a sense, and yet it's so simple and so vast, and it's something which one can't put into words. It's tremendous.
Stephen, I've often wondered, you know, these scientists who discover the discoveries that they suddenly make. Now, do these scientists get impressions from your side of life, or do they discover things themselves by trial and error?
Well, I think that obviously there must be, in a sense, a form of trial and a form of error. But then again, what is error? I mean, the whole thing surely is that although one doesn't want to take away from an individual personality their own sort of personal self or their own sort of personal ability, in a sense, one must look upon individuals as instruments. I think this is the only sensible way of seeing it, that all bodies are instruments. All brains are instruments, and when one considers that there is tremendous thought force which is being projected from all manner of peoples on this side of life, and for instance, I mean, a particular person on this side may feel that they have something to offer humanity, that they have some knowledge that they wish to project, so they will choose an individual on earth who shows promise, who has some natural ability of their own, but at the same time who are sensitive enough in a certain way that they can be used. In other words, thoughts, after all, are projected, and those thoughts are, as it were, in themselves a kind of auto-suggestion which makes the individual who is the instrument experiment on certain lines which bring forth eventually certain results. I think that everyone must look upon not only the individual as an instrument, but look upon the collective mass of humanity as an enormous, I don't say machine, but an enormous sort of mass mind. I think there's the individual mind, or the individual brain, or the individual person, and all these things are the same, really, in a way. And also there is the mass. Well, that is why one generation, generally speaking, has a kind of mass sort of outlook, a mass sort of idea, a mass way of life. But the individuals here and there who are impressed and used by entities on this side strike new notes. In other words, they strike out on different wavelengths, or they work on different lines or in different ways and bring forth new knowledge or new experience, or bring forth new inventions, if you like. The whole point is that everything is being conducted and everything is being controlled, in a sense, from higher minds, more evolved minds. All life is subject to thought transference. All life is subject to the forces of thoughts of untold millions of souls, many who have progressed to great heights. And the whole thing is that in the process of endeavouring to impress and inspire, obviously it is not always easy, often it is very difficult, often it is difficult to find a subject that is suitable, that can be used, who can be placed in a certain position, shall we say, on earth, so that thought force, that idea, that new discovery, whatever it is, may be projected and through and brought to being, brought to fruition in your world in such a way that it can be a benefit. Of course, we do know, and this is the unfortunate thing, that much that is projected or brought forth into your world for the benefit of the human race is quite often used for ulterior motives by individuals or collective groups of peoples in your world. That is the tragedy. You see, with everything, it seems to me that there is a good and there is a bad possibility with it. I mean, you take anything that is discovered, it has its good uses, its good purpose, which can be of benefit and of good to humanity, and then there's the other aspect where it can be used in the opposite way. I mean, you take the power of atomic energy. I mean, atomic power and energy used in the right direction could be a tremendous blessing to man, but unfortunately it is, at the moment anyway, being used, or if not being used, it is the idea behind the thoughts of peoples in high places and governments is that it can be used in as a form of defense, or it can be used in warfare as a weapon for destruction. But behind all discoveries, behind everything that is given, and all things originate from the mass mind, if you can put it like that, because All that is to be discovered is already there waiting to be discovered, and it means that to discover it, people have got to use, to some extent, their own initiative and their own imagination. But what is important is to remember and realize that there are untold numbers of souls on different spheres or planes who already have access to this knowledge, and who can and who endeavor to impress and to impart this knowledge to your world through individuals who can act as instruments or mediums. I don't necessarily mean only mediums in the sense of the medium that I use now, because there are all manner of forms of mediumship. And after all said and done, all mediumship basically depends upon the thought power and the thought which must emanate from this side and which must be transmitted through mentalities, through individuals, sensitives on earth. And there are all forms of sensitives. Some people, of course, are sensitive to lower vibrations, and they become the agents of lower thoughts and lower actions. Others are sensitive to the vibrations and the thoughts of people on higher spheres and higher planes, and in consequence, their lives and all that they endeavor to think or do is on a higher strata. And then, of course, you get people who have a certain type of mind, which is perhaps, in a sense, very brilliant, very clever, and they can be subject or used by souls on this side to invent and to bring into being certain things which, as I say, can be and often are beneficial to mankind. But we must remember that our worlds are composed of all manner of people according to their evolution and development on all different stratas of being. And there are so many different forms and different states of experience and so many different grades of experience and knowledge, and that so much that is imparted can be good, and some of the knowledge which can be brought through can be on a lower start altogether, and it can be not very helpful. In fact, it could be even bad. Point is that one has got to accept the fact that on these different starts of being, one reaches according to one's desiring and one's evolving, according to one's desiring to expand oneself in such a way that one is makes accessible to all sorts of knowledge of a higher order. But a lot of people, we must remember, are not particularly anxious to progress to that extent. Some people are quite content to stay in a certain sphere or place and assimilate what they can from that and find their own particular happiness in that. And of course there are many who have no desire to make contact with other spheres or other planes, either of a lower order or a higher. But the vast majority of people obviously are in the state, in fact I suppose really in a sense everyone is, although there are those who seem to stand still, but there's no such thing as standing still, but everyone is in a state of constant evolution. But it's so subtle, it's so very, very subtle, and often so very, very slow, that one just doesn't realize it. I mean, I've experienced in my short time here all sorts and manner of experiences, and all sorts of things have happened within me and around me, and I'm becoming more and more conscious of the tremendous vastness of it all and the tremendous possibility of it all. But at the same time, I'm still in some senses at times a little puzzled and a little uncertain, a little unsure. But I have a fundamental realization within myself that out of all things, good or bad, whether it is in your world or even on this, in any particular sphere, that it is all necessary, and it's all this that makes it all so real, so wonderful, so exciting. And if we accept the fact that we are the recipients of knowledge and experience from all manner of peoples, from all different spheres, that we are gradually becoming, and though it's very slow, nevertheless we are all becoming more conversant with the meaning and the purpose of life, and that we are in a sense subject to laws which are immutable, which obviously are of such an order, so high an order, that nothing, although it may seem sometimes that things may go wrong, that really nothing really goes wrong. It only seems so, and possibly in the going wrong, sometimes it's necessary, because only in that way can one learn some experience that is essential, which one can only learn that way. In other words, even in the bad, or that which we do not like, or that which is not good, or does not seem good, that out of it all, out of all the chaos and the uncertainty and the unhappiness and all the complication and the difficulties, we are all gradually, so slowly but surely, learning and experiencing and evolving. And it seems to me that we're all subject to this mind, this tremendous, powerful thought force, which is behind all individual and collective life. And that none of us, whatever our experience of life may be, on your side or on this, should have any fears or any doubts, that we should know and we should understand that we are in our own particular sphere of evolution or our own state of being, because that is the right place for us at that particular time in our experience, that eventually we must all reach a certain, at least a certain grade or a certain stage of experience that is common to us all. It seems to me that although we don't possibly ever reach a common ground in the sense that we are all completely alike, and I think that perhaps could be a little frightening, but the point is that when we do reach, in a sense, a common understanding and a common realization of the purpose of life and our part in that life and how we all fit in and what part we must play and how gradually, though we are separate individuals, we are all part of each other, and that we are creating and making that particular life in which we find ourselves. I've certainly discovered that whatever this life is, it is what I myself, in a sense, have helped to make by my own contribution. Any sphere, any part of life in which you may be, whether it's on your side or this, is what we ourselves individually and collectively have brought into being. We are no more and no less than what we feel and what we think. In other words, our thoughts are the realities, and the thoughts, the actions that follow the thoughts make in substance and in shape and in form and in solidity for the time in which we move that reality of life in which we find ourselves. But even that we know, as we create it and we live it, we know it's transitory, it must pass, because we should pass from it inasmuch that we shall evolve past it to such an extent that we shall see it as it really is, and we shall desire other things, better things, for ourselves and for our own expressing and desiring, and itself will create a new world and a new life. And so it is, we obviously evolve from sphere to sphere, from place to place, and this world, whatever world one may find oneself in, is what we have created, what we have brought into being ourselves. Thought is the predominant factor. Thought is the reality, and it is as we think that we are, and that is, I think, the most important thing to realize in life.
Yes, quite right.
If you think hard enough about something, and that something is necessary or is good for you, it will come into being, because the very process of the thought must bring its own reaction. It must create sets of circumstances or conditions which will bring into line those things which you have so long desired or thought. But then again, if those things are not good for you, if for some reason or other it would be detrimental for you to have that particular something that you are possibly thinking very much about and concentrating and desiring and wishing and putting all your thought force into making a creative reality, if that thing or that, whatever it may be, were not to be in some way good for you, it wouldn't come into being. Because, you see, although in the process of searching for good, you may have to combat and will have to be affected by that which is termed bad, it doesn't mean to say that the good will come immediately. And that to reach it, you may have to go through a lot of things which are detrimental, or so it seems. But it may be that in striving to reach the good, the thing that has been of real value, strange as it may seem, has been the experience of bad. And this may sound a bit paradoxical, but I think it's perfectly true. Because in reaching the good, the only way we can reach the good is to experience the bad. Yes. So that by the time we reach the good, we can appreciate it.
Yes.
Do you understand?
Yes,
it's very difficult to put into words.
Oh, yes, I
mean, people, for instance, they sigh and they moan and they desire this or they desire that. In this case, if you like, it might be something in a sense that is of a material nature. And quite often, the thing that they most want doesn't seem to come. And the more they think about it, the more remote it becomes. And you'd think that because they put all they have into bringing that into being, into focus as it were, that it must eventually come. Well, of course eventually, sometimes, quite often it does. But the point is that it may not be good for them to have that. In fact, it may be something very detrimental in the long run. And by the very process of striving, it is not so much the achieving of this particular thing, which may be of a material nature, but it is in the striving for it that one has gained most, not in the achieving or the even the having of this particular thing. But if you're striving for something which is not basically material, but is spiritually something that is very valuable, something which is tangible because it is a reality and not something which is a fleeting thing and has no real bearing or meaning on life or on your particular life, then if you're searching for something which is of the reality of the mind, something that is the reality of the spirit, something that is really tangible in time itself, therefore it is something that is never lost because it is good to have, then that may take a long time, but it can be and it will be reached. But the point is this, that it is often the suffering, it is often the unhappiness, it is often the striving, it is often the disappointment, it is often the setback. It is all those experiences that have led up to reaching that something that is so good, that have really been worthwhile and made you appreciate and will make one appreciate better when you reach that particular goal you set. Because it's the only way. Anything that is achieved quickly and simply and easily has no bearing, no meaning, no value at all. It is pointless, useless, and in my opinion, from what I've gained, it is stupid even to even conceive or to think about it, because it has nothing to offer but something which is so far removed from what is obviously the material, something which is obviously of a changing origin, a changing nature by its very process of being of a material matter. This in its own self, although in a sense it may give some satisfaction for a short space of time, it has no real bearing, no real meaning in time itself, and it certainly will not bring any real happiness. What really matters is the realization that you as a human being are going through various stages and processes of change and evolution, that you are experiencing all manner of experiences, all conditions of life that may affect you, all the people that one meets and all the experiences that one has with people and with life are all necessary, all essential, and indeed it is often important that one should sometimes even have to return, as we know, to Earth for a new incarnation, because in a certain new life, in a certain new way, in a certain new body, one can learn experience and one can have all manner of things happen which are essential to the general well-being and above all to the eternal progress of the human soul, because you cannot in one nutshell contain everything. You must burst the bonds and you must sort of gradually go through the process of other lives and other experiences until such time that you have absorbed everything that it is possible to absorb in every way, in every sense, in that particular sphere which is so essential to one's unfoldment and development in that particular part of one's evolution. Because in one life it's obviously not possible to assimilate and know and experience all that is essential in that particular world or in that particular sphere. I realize now that one goes through innumerable changes, that one doesn't stay the same, and that it would be a terrible thing, in fact it would be an impossible thing to stay the same, because all life is change, all life is gradual process of evolution from sphere to sphere and experience to experience. And we are the product of experience and the product of many lives. And it is when we've evolved to a stage of being or a state of being so far removed from that which we have known in a material sense that we have really assimilated everything that it can give the earth, then we enter into spheres far removed from earth, and we enter into new ways of thinking, new thoughts which in themselves are so pregnant with promise and opportunity that they make life so tremendously exciting and beautiful that there's no way of really expressing it. I know there are lots of things that I shall, I hope, eventually want to tell you, but I know there are many things already that I've experienced that will be extremely difficult to express and describe. But I do know this, that I have learned over many experiences in several lives, which I'm gradually beginning to learn something about, and which have taught me and helped me a great deal, and which have opened the doors for me here, because I realize it's not one life, but many lives that have made possible the present stage of evolution that I find myself in now. Because if my last life was the only life I had known, it's obvious that it could never have been for me as wonderful as it is, because I wouldn't have been able to have appreciated it. I wouldn't have been ready to assimilate and understand it. It's so tremendous, this realization that comes. I admit that in a sense it does seem to come over here rather suddenly. At least it did with me, it may not with others, but it seemed to me as if all of a sudden everything was gradually being revealed. It seemed to happen in a sense rather quickly, and yet I realize it was in a sense fundamentally subtly done. It's like going to sleep in a sense, and you have the most extraordinary, wonderful dream. It's like some glorious something which is so full of tremendous life and promise and hope and colour and magic and beauty, and one just doesn't want to wake up from it. And but this is a dream which to me is a reality, and which obviously I, in a sense, I'm fully aware of. At the same time, I'm almost afraid to wake up in case I lose it or spoil it in some way. What I'm trying to do is to hold on to everything that I'm learning, everything I'm experiencing, for a time, so that I can sort of push it out to you, to the world. But how much I can reveal, how much I can do, I don't know. It's as if somehow that one's almost afraid that in the waking up process one comes back to the earth with a bump. And that's exactly how it is. It's like, to me, the dream world, this world in which I find myself, is the reality. Your world is a state of being to which, in a sense, I don't want to return. And yet, at the same time, I want to give out all I possibly can that may be of some value and some help. But in the process of coming back with a bang, you might say, to earth, it's like a wonderful dream, as I said, that when you wakened up, you thought to yourself, oh my God, I'm back in this life again, how ghastly it all is, and I've got to face up to it, and I've been in such a wonderful world. And then you can try to remember and recapture things, and as the time progresses of the day, you find you've lost it all, and you're trying desperately to cling on to some memory of it. And that's how it is when I come back to you. I have the wonderful reality of this life, but as I enter into your world, it seems to enter into your world and face the reality of it and communicate in it. The wonderful experiences that I've had, though they're still there, at the same time they're difficult to hold and difficult to retain in memory, and it's much more difficult still to explain or express in words so that you could understand it. But that's my job and my task that I should try and do anyway. It's going to be rather difficult, but I should do it.
Oh, thank you, Stephen.
Anyway, it's exciting, it's wonderful, and quite frankly, whatever form of life, and I feel this is probably the most important thing, and I think it's something which you obviously know anyway, but whatever form of life an individual personality may find oneself in, I think the point is to realize that it is essential, it's necessary. It sometimes may be in the process of learning, not always easy, not always pleasant, sometimes disturbing and distressing. Whatever one may have to face in any form of life or existence that you may find yourself, it's all necessary. And there comes, not that one seeks reward, or perhaps may not even be conscious of it, but the point is that the reward does come. But the only way that we can ever hope to find true happiness and true peace of mind is to go through these lives, is to go through these experiences, is to face up to all that life may offer, or all that life may demand from one, accepting it, but at the same time facing it squarely and doing what one can about it, and doing the best one can, and often, where necessary, forgetting yourself in the process of serving life and serving others and making life different, changing it. When you see things which are bad, then one must of oneself feel the urge to alter the circumstances. It's the only way that we shall bring about changes within ourselves, is to change it for others, and in the process of changing for others, we change ourselves. It seems to me that life is a great adventure, a wonderful, exciting thing that none of us can avoid, which we must all face because we are all placed in it, and it's part of our inheritance and our experience, which is necessary. And our contribution to it is as important as anything we may receive from life itself. In other words, we are living, and that is the great thing, that is the great exciting thing, that we are all conscious, that we are all living, each of one of us on our different plane of sphere according to our evolution or lack of it. It matters not what strata we're on, in a sense. We are all part of each other. We are all struggling, we are all working slowly but surely to a greater goal, where we shall find a greater realization, of course. But it will all come through effort. It will all come through the desiring of wanting to know. In other words, searching for truth, searching for knowledge. That is the answer to life. That is what life is. And it is only that which makes life really tolerable and really what it should be, a place of a world of intense beauty and intense reality. Nothing is lost. I think that's the most important thing to realize. Nothing that is of value, nothing that is really of great value or great worth is ever lost. Everything is retained. All the beauties of life, all the beauties of nature, all the changing things which seem to come and which sometimes seem sad and distressing, all these things, they are good for us. And in a sense, they are, although they seem to be changing, some of these things that seem to change and disturb us are not what they seem. For the reality is there. It's like the setting of the sun and the darkness descending upon the earth. But the sun is going to rise again, and it's going to be bright and beautiful, and our night will be turned into day again. There's no darkness, only the darkness of men's minds. If only they allow themselves to be illuminated, the sun will shine, and it will always be for them warmth and loveliness and beauty. There's no reason for people to doubt or fear. There's no reason for people to feel that death is the end, that death is the destroyer. Death is the revealer. Every second of every moment of every day, everyone is dying in some shape or form. Not necessarily a physical death, but sometimes in a sense a mental and a spiritual one. When people realize the reality of spirit, the reality of life itself, the eternal life, there can be no death. There may be death in the sense that people are ignorant, and ignorance is death. That's the only death that people need be afraid of, the death of ignorance. When people have the realization of truth, and that it has always been reborn and reawakened, that it has always been made clearer and stronger and more fresh and more understandable according to one's evolution and one's reaching out to it. And as one reaches out, one approaches nearer and nearer to the reality of things. This is the thing that matters, searching for truth, the finding of truth, and truth making you more and more free and more able to achieve in consequence, because through truth we achieve things. One can't find words, but one feels intensely. I do. Anyway, eventually I hope to impart more and more things to you, but it's not going to be easy, but I shall do it, but it'll be a gradual process. Anyway, I'm afraid I really must go, because, you understand how I feel. I get terribly worked up. I can't help it. That's me.
Yes,
but we are going to do great things, but it's going to be... it's going to be a cooperative effort. It's going to be not only just me. Don't think that. When I come and speak to you, naturally, in a sense, it's me, and naturally you want to feel it's me, and it is me. But behind me are lots and lots and lots and lots of other me's, and lots of other thou's. You know, I mean, in other words, I feel when I come to you that I am part of tremendous group souls of individuals, some whom I've met, some I don't even know, but I sense their presence. I haven't even seen some of these people. I haven't even, as it were, spoken to them. They haven't, as far as I know, even spoken to me, but I feel their souls. It's as if, when I'm speaking, I've become the mouthpiece of others. It's an extraordinary thing how I lose, in a sense, although I retain my identity, I lose it, in a sense, in the tremendous realization that all that is being done, all that is being said, all that is being achieved is of us all, that we are all so entwined. It's a tremendous, wonderful feeling. That there's no loneliness anymore. It's as if somehow one has one's personality, one's individuality, one retains one's own self, and yet one is glad, in a sense, to be conscious of the oneness with all these enormous numbers of souls. It's this feeling as if one is never alone, and yet at the same time one is still oneself. It's a tremendous feeling that one can retain one's personal self and one's personal freedom, one can express oneself in one's own way and yet all that one is, one still realizes that one's part of the rest and that we are all, as it were, in tune, that's it, I suppose, this being in tune, one with the other, this beautiful harmony that exists between us, this tremendous peace that comes through this realization of love, because it is a love, and it's so far-reaching, and it's so immense, and so tremendous, it's something which is so vast that one can't even begin to describe it. Whatever love one may have felt when on earth, whatever emotions one may have had with love, even though it is a wonderful, wonderful thing in itself, love, a physical love, and a mental love, and in a sense a spiritual love, but this love is all-embracing. In other words, it's something so tremendous that it is a love of such overpowering strength that it makes all things possible, because one is never alone in this love. It's a love which includes and embraces all humanity, all forms of life, whether it is just of the human race or even of the animal kingdom. In everything that has life, there is love, and it is this love that makes all things possible. I don't know how to describe it, but I know I feel it with a great intensity. And perhaps one day, in some shape or form, I can impart it more and more to you. But anyway, I'm going to try. Anyway, I had to go now, dear, but I'll come again on Monday, all being well.
Oh, please.
Anyway, and keep your chin up and don't worry, because I'm behind you every step of the way, and not only me, but untold numbers of souls, many that you know and many, many more that you don't know, but whose love for you is very great. Anyway, I must go. Cheerio and God bless.
Cheerio, God bless you. Speaking so beautifully.
Bye-bye. Oh, goodness me, he cannot go on mounting. He's marvellous, really.
Yes.
Bye-bye.